Hello, and welcome to Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we're going to be studying Kohelet Perek Vav together. As we enter Perek Vav of Kohelet, we're carrying forward a disturbing realization from the last Perek, from Perek Hei. There, we witness how even the most well-intentioned plans, Yosef's original vision of Hashem's stewardship, became systematically corrupted. And how did the corruption come about? Through royal ownership and bureaucratic distance. We saw Paro, who should have been a pakid, a guardian of this gift from God, transform into someone obsessed with accumulating silver, which ultimately brought him no satisfaction. Perek Hei ended with Paro right where he began, unable to sleep. This time, his insomnia comes not from a dream about the future, but from the way he has squandered the divine opportunity that Hashem put in his lap. All that wealth, all that power, his exploitation of his own population doesn't let him sleep. As the pasuk back in Perek Hei put it, Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money. And now in Perek Vav, Shlomo takes this power problem and generalizes it. He reveals its universal application. What happened to Paro, it turns out, is not an isolated case. It's a fundamental human problem, and it faces even ordinary people, those who are not emperors or kings. There's an evil that I've seen under the sun, and it lies heavily upon mankind. This is not just about one corrupted king, Shlomo's arguing. This is about Ha'adam, humanity itself. And notice that word again, Ha'adam. We're back in Adam territory, back to the fundamental human condition after Hashem expelled us all from his garden. Shlomo next describes a man who is the recipient of God's bounty. Ish asher yiten lo ha'alokim osher u'nechasim v'chavod, a man who God grants osher, wealth, nechasim, possessions, money, kavod, and honor. Ve'einenu chasir l'nafsho mikol asher yitaveh, he lacks nothing of all that he desires. This person has everything. From the outside, this looks like a complete success. But as we continue, we get to the sad qualifier. With all these gifts, God does not give this person power to enjoy them. That word yashlitenu is crucial. It's borrowed actually from the Yosef story, which we saw last parak, seems to be a kind of template for these ideas. Remember Yosef? Hu hashalit al ha'aretz. Same shorosh as yashlitenu. He was the shalit, the ruler over the land, given that power by Paro. Yashlitenu means to give power over, to enable. Just like Paro, you can think you own something, but do you really have shlita, control over it? Can you actually le'achol mimenu, eat from it, benefit from it, derive satisfaction from it? Ki ish nachri yachlenu, but a stranger enjoys them. All that wealth, all those possessions, and ish nachri, a stranger, someone who didn't work for it, ends up benefiting. We've seen this pattern before in our Yosef story. The Egyptians worked for grain, but Paro accumulated all the silver. The brothers plotted against Yosef, but in the end, he rose to power. The one who seems to control everything might discover that control is an illusion. Zehevel v'chali rahu. This is hevel. Hevel. There's our key word again. Hevel, like the murdered son whose name meant vapor. And chali ra. A grievous evil, something that makes you literally chole, sick. But Shlomo isn't finished. He's about to take this to an even more extreme level. Im yolid ish mea, if a man fathers 100 children, v'shanim rabot yichyeh, v'rav shiyu yamei shanav, and he lives many years so that the days of his years are many. Think about what this represents, the ultimate victory over mortality. Not only does this person live shanim rabot many years, but he may have Me'ah children, 100 children to carry on his legacy. He's beating death both ways, living long life on his own and ensuring continuation through his massive progeny. But notice what keeps appearing in this chapter. V'nafsho lo tispa min hatova. But his soul is not satisfied with life's good things. Here's the key insight Shlomo is developing. A human being is not just a body. You can feed your body. You can ensure biological continuation. You can accumulate possessions for the body. But what about the nefesh, the soul? The nefesh has different hungers than the body. The body can be satisfied with food, with fulfillment, with material comfort. But v'nafsho lo tispa min hatova, his soul is not satisfied. The soul hungers for meaning, for purpose, for something that transcends mere accumulation. And then comes perhaps the most chilling observation. Vigam krura lo haitalo. This person being described, he also has no guarantee of burial. After all that life, all that progeny, all that apparent success, he may not even receive proper burial. The most basic dignity, the final care that the body requires, even that is not guaranteed. And this leads to Shlomo's shocking conclusion. Amarti tov bimenu hanefel. I say that a stillborn child is better off than he, the man he described. Ki behevel ba, because he comes just in a breath. Uvechoshech yilech, and he goes in darkness. Uvechoshech shmo yehuseh, and in darkness his name is covered. There's that word again, behevel ba, connecting to our larger narrative about the murdered hevel. But here hevel becomes a kind of mercy. That stillborn comes behevel in vapor, in transience, but he is spared the ache of unfulfillment. He goes in darkness, and the darkness becomes a covering, almost like a kever, almost like a grave. And in rabbinic literature, interestingly, the womb is sometimes called a kever because both represent transitions between worlds. The stillborn has its kever in the darkness of the womb, its name covered and protected by that same darkness. Gam shemesh lo ra'a v'lo yada nacha azel mizeh. Shlomo continues, moreover, and has not seen the sun or known anything, this nefel, this stillborn, yet it finds rest. Gam shemesh lo ra'a has not seen the sun. The sun marks time, marks change, marks the relentless passage that makes everything temporary. The stillborn never entered the world, tachat ha-shemesh, under the sun, where nothing lasts and everything is subject to the obstacles we identified back in Perek Aleph. Nachat, it finds rest rather than he. The stillborn has nachat, while the man with 100 children and great longevity does not have rest. But Shlomo isn't done pushing this to its logical extreme. V'ilu chaya elef shanim, if he should live 1,000 years, pa'amayim, twice over, v'lo ra'at tova, and has not seen happiness. Halo el makom echad kol holech, because do we not all go to the same place? 2,000 years of life, imagine the ultimate longevity, but he has not seen happiness, not seen cha, not mere pleasure, but tova, not seen genuine good, true satisfaction. Whether you live 2,000 years or die in the womb, al makom echad holech, everyone goes to the same place. Death is still the great equalizer. And this leads to one of Shlomo's most penetrating psychological observations. Kol amal ha'adam lefihu, v'gam ha'nefesh lo timaleh. All the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite, his nefesh, is not satisfied. Think about this in terms of our larger Adam narrative. After eating from the tree of knowledge, Adam was cursed with amal, toilsome labor. B'zeyat apecha tocha lechem, eating by the sweat of his brow. All that cursed amal, what's it really for? Lepihu, for his mouth, to feed the body. V'gam ha'nefesh lo timaleh, yet his appetite is not satisfied. But here's the cruel irony. You can feed your mouth, but ha'nefesh lo timaleh, his soul is not fulfilled. The nefesh has hungers that amal cannot satisfy. No amount of achievement, no accumulation of wealth or possessions can fill the deeper void. Ki ma yoter l'chacham min haksil, what advantage has the wise man over the fool? What advantage has the wise man over the fool? And what does the poor man have who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Even wisdom, which seems superior back in Perek Bet, what yoter does it provide? Ma yoter, what advantage does the wise have over the fool? If both end up in the same place, if both struggle with the same fundamental nefesh emptiness, what's the real difference? What does the poor man have who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Even the poor man who has learned to navigate life with his wisdom knows how to walk. What does he really gain? Tov ma'ra einayim ma'aloch nefesh. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. Gam ze hevel ruach. This is also hevel, chasing after the wind. Tov ma'ra einayim ma'aloch nefesh. What you can actually see, what's present and tangible, is better than holoch nefesh, the wandering of the soul. When the nefesh wanders, seeking something it can't name, can't locate, can't satisfy, that's worse than simply accepting what's visible and present. Even this wisdom about accepting limitations is ultimately vapor. And now comes a passage that brings us full circle to our Adam narrative. Mashaya kvar nikrashmo. Whatever came has already been named. This echoes Adam in Gan Eden. Remember, Andram called names to all the animals. The naming was already done. The fundamental categories of existence were established back in the beginning. V'noda asher hu Adam. And it's known what a man is, Adam. There's that specific word again. We know what Adam is. We know his limitations, his mortality, his place in the created order. V'lo yuchal adin im shetakif mimenu. He can't dispute with one stronger than he. Who did Adam try to dispute with? Who was takif mimenu, stronger than he? When Adam ate from the tree, he was essentially disputing with God's decree, challenging the boundary that had been set. And what was the result? Exactly what we see in the Cain and Hevel story. When you fight with someone stronger, when you challenge the natural order, you end up with Hevel, you end up with tragedy. And this brings us to the chapter's devastating conclusion. For there are many words that increase vanity. What is the advantage of man? Many words that increase Hevel. The more we talk, the more we philosophize, the more we try to solve those fundamental problems, marbim Hevel. We increase Hevel. We multiply the Hevel, the uselessness. Mayuter la'adam, what advantage? We're back to the fundamental question from Parak Aleph. Mayitron la'adam b'chol amalo. What advantage is there for Adam in all of this toil? After all this analysis, after all the attempts to find meaning, what advantage do we really have? For who knows what is good for man while he lives? This is the ultimate epistemological crisis. We don't even know mato, what is good. How can we guide our lives when we can't even identify what's truly beneficial? The few days of his hevel life, even our chayim, our very life is described as chaye hevlo. Life itself has become hevel, vapor, like the murdered sun. Yasem Kitzel, which he passes like a shadow insubstantial, dependent on light from elsewhere, constantly shifting. That's what he compares his life to. Asher, Mia Kidla Adam Maya Acharav Tachana Shemesh. For who can tell, man, what will be after him under the sun? We can't even plan properly because we don't know Maya Acharav, what will be after him. We can't see the future. We can't ensure continuity. We can't even know if our efforts will matter. And here, remarkably, the parak ends. Not with a solution, not with a familiar refrain about eating and drinking and finding joy, but with complete epistemological breakdown. Mi yodea. Who knows? Mi yagid. Who can tell? And the parak ends with a stuma, a samach, which connotes an ending. Shlomo reached complete intellectual gridlock. He's stuck. Parak Vav has taken the paro problem from Parak Hay and revealed its universality. The illusion of ownership, the gap between body and nefesh, the inability to truly l'achol mimenu, to derive satisfaction from what we think we possess, these are not the failings of one corrupted king. They are the human condition, tachat ha-shemesh. We've followed the amal that began with Adam's curse, traced it through the systematic experiments of Parak Bet, witnessed its corruption in the Yosef story of Prakim Gimel Dalet Hay, and now discovered that even when we seem to have everything, osho nechasim v'chavod, the nefesh remains unsatisfied. The hevel problem has deepened beyond anything we've seen before. It's not just that things don't last or that life is unfair. It's that we can't even know ma tov la'adam. We can't distinguish between what's truly beneficial and what's merely apparent. We live kitzel, like shadows, in a world where even our best efforts benefit only ish nochri, strangers. Shlomo has reached the absolute bottom. The stuma represents complete intellectual surrender. But in Kohelet's larger journey, hitting bottom isn't the end. It's often the prerequisite for breakthrough. When every conventional wisdom has been exhausted, when every pathway has been tested and found wanting, that's when the real wisdom can begin. So the question now is, where can one go from here? How does the journey continue when you've reached miyodea? Who knows? And speaking of miyodea, read that last pasuk once more and listen for the echoes. Shlomo says, Ki mi yodea ma tov la'adam b'chaim. Who knows what is good for man in life? Mispar yamei chayei hevlo, the days of his fleeting life. Think about it. Shlomo is talking about Adam. Maybe not just all men, but the very first man, Adam. There were two special trees in that garden. And what were their names? There was a tree of knowledge and a tree of life. Listen again to this last pasuk. Ki mi yodea ma tov la'adam b'chaim mispar yamei chayei hevlo. You have all the elements here. Adam, with his two special trees, knowledge, da'at, and life, chaim. Adam ate from one of them against the rules, that tree of knowledge, And what did it get him? Shlomo gives us the grim answer. Not much. Miodea. Miodea matov. After eating from a tree that was supposed to give you knowledge of tov, the verdict is in. Miodea matov. Who really knows what's good? Adam ends up empty-handed. He walks away from the sin without the divine secrets he had hoped to gain. And what about the second tree, the tree of life, the one that seems to promise immortality? Well, Shlomo says in this chapter, you can live for a long time. You can live 2,000 years and still not find happiness if you're seeking ultimate happiness from worldly pleasures. Turns out, neither tree, the one that grants immortality, nor the one that grants piercing wisdom, is enough to solve life's deepest challenges. That's the dead end Shlomo will face as we move into Perek Zion. But for now, we sit in the stuma, in the stunned silence of someone who has honestly confronted the limits of human knowledge and control. And in this silence, perhaps something new can finally be heard. Today's study is dedicated by Helen and Moshe Sassover in memory of their beloved father and grandfather, Ted Ordon, Mordechai Ben Ephraim, and Miriam Golda, in commemoration of his 10th Yahrzeit. His family is forever grateful for his devotion to family, vision, courage, and optimism. May the merit of our collective learning elevate his neshama and bring unity and peace to Klal Yisrael. Thank you for the opportunity to study together.